The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Okay, let's start off with, this is kind of interesting, how to get along with anyone. Whether you get cornered by a chatterbox or embarrassed by a jokester, you can turn things into your favor. While politely making small talk at a baby shower, my day was ruined in one fell swoop. "Oh, are you expecting?" asked a family friend, eyeballing my body up and down. I sheepishly shook my head. This is by Rosemary Counter. Instantly regretting both my party dress and my ample plate of mini sandwiches. Just when I thought this conversation couldn't get worse, it did. "Well," she asked earnestly, "why not?" Reasons and retorts flooded my mind. Deep-rooted doubts about my maternal capabilities, fear of climate change, just fat, thanks, or perhaps a well-chosen explicative. Instead, I murmured something about being busy at work and excused myself to mope for the rest of the afternoon. I've since recovered emotionally, though I sometimes daydream of a do-over. What should I have said to such a nosy question from such a rude person? And how about all those other challenging personalities we have to converse with, whether we want to or not? Just in time for the holidays, I ask experts about how to deal with the trickiest, tackiest, meanest, and most maddening personalities with nary a single insult hurled. The complainer. You know this type. The restaurant is too expensive. The music is too loud. My burger is overdone and I can hardly taste it anyhow because I'm probably coming down with something. As Saturday Night Live's famous Debbie Downer sketch goes, "Wah, wah, wah." But the complainer in real life isn't so funny. This is a person who thinks life's unfair to them, says Jody Carrington, a psychologist and author of Feeling Seen, Reconnecting in a Disconnecting World. Nobody's that bummed out by a burger. They're down about other bigger things and are letting it out on specific, controllable things like what's on their plate. Not to mention the unfortunate server who dared to deliver it. How to deal with this good mood thief? If you want to interact better with these people, it starts with empathy, says Carrington. This sentiment is true for all tricky personalities, but it's especially hard with a complainer. Start by removing the small stuff from the equation. Let them choose their favorite restaurant, for example, so you can both focus on the bigger picture. Get them talking about what's really bothered them, if you can, and then challenge their negative narrative wherever possible with questions about what's good, fun, and exciting in their lives. The old adage still applies, says Carrington. You gotta kill them with kindness and hope it rubs off. The contrarian. You say it's a nice day out, they say it's too hot. You read a good book, they thought it was terrible. You mention they contradict everything you say, they say, "No, I don't." A contrarian is someone who just likes to argue, explains Monica Guzman, author of I Never Thought It That Way, or How to Have Fiercely Curious Conversations in Dangerous Divided Times. Sometimes this is fun, but other times it's aggressive and unpleasant. The contrarian can't always tell the difference. So while you're arguing the issue at hand, they're arguing for the argument itself. So they win every time. How can you be better? How can you better brave this battle? Since a contrarian only wants to spar, choose your battles. For anything inconsequential, the most disarming way to handle a contrarian is to say, "You agree with them," says Lee and Leslie, argument expert and author of Conflicted: Why Arguments Are Tearing Us Apart and How They Can Bring Us Together. This doesn't mean you lie. Try to agree on that to something small and specific, or I can definitely see your point. If you legit don't agree on a single thing, then change the topic. When you want to stand your ground, you can move to the contrarian beyond their default position by becoming a more nuanced opponent. You can sometimes get them off the opinion showdown by asking for their story or experience with the matter, says Guzman. Asking, "How did you come to believe that?" or "Has that ever happened to you?" can move the conversation away from the competition of opinions and toward a personal perspective. You might learn that you value their opinion after all. The chatterbox. If you can't ever seem to finish a story or sentence, chances are you're face-to-face with a chatterbox. Despite the adorable moniker, they can be frustrating bunch, says communication expert Sandy Gerber, author of Emotional Magnetism, or How to Communicate to Ignite Connection with Your Relationships. The chatterbox is a story stealer. They identify with whatever you're saying and then barf out a story about themselves, she says. It feels as if the chatterbox is constantly trying to one-up you. But that's not necessarily true. They could be socially anxious, uncomfortable with silence, or just extra passionate and excitable. But whatever the reason, they probably don't even notice they do this, nor understand the deeper reason why. Particularly in kids, chatterboxes could just as easily be called connection seekers, says Carrington. That's all they're after, but they're not giving you the chance to connect back, so they talk even more. And because they're chatting a mile a minute, you might not notice until you're irked on the drive home, having realized all your stories were hijacked. Next time, try the phrase you'd least expect. Tell me more, says Carrington. Choose a topic and let them exhaust it. Ask them questions. Follow up and really listen. Once the chatterbox has run out of things to say, their need to be heard has been met. So now it's your turn. Jump in with something like, I just love all your stories, and I have one for you, too. For once, the floor is yours. That's, of course, assuming you haven't passed out first. The tech addict. Socially, few things are more annoying than someone who repeatedly checks their phone in the middle of your conversation. Soon enough, you may be projecting sulky thoughts their way, says Carrington. Like, I'm boring you. You're more concerned with whatever's on that phone than me. You don't care about me. Ouch! Just remember, the tech addict's annoying habits aren't about you. It's rude for sure. But sometimes you mistake the behavior for more than what it is, says Leslie. It's very possible they're just nervous or anxious. It's also possible their partner is stranded with a flat tire and their kid is sick. The point is, you don't know. So before you hastily rage at the tech addict's blatant rudeness, focus instead on building a better conversation than whatever is going down on Instagram. But you might never get there, given the power of today's clickbait. So if you're close enough to a person, Carrington advises you to cheekily ask, what's on that thing that's so alluring? Chances are they'll apologize and sheepishly talk the phone away. And if the answer is something real, talk about it. Better yet, avoid the situation in advance by saying something like, I'm so interested in catching up properly. How about we leave our phones in the car? If they indeed have that flat tire or sick kid, you won't have to assume it's because your stories are boring. The political antagonist. Boy, this is a season for that, isn't it? Oh, boy. This person's ideology is fundamentally different from yours. They've read the news and or the dark web, and as usual, they're ready and eager to rumble. No family is immune to political differences, though Gutzman has a particularly complicated case. She's the liberal daughter of Mexican immigrants who voted for Donald Trump twice, and naturally they want to discuss differing politics over dessert. Like the contrarian, the political antagonist lives to argue. Also, only they've got a great big end game of changing your mind. They can't and won't change theirs, and neither will you, because you're both passionate about your politics, which is exactly why they've singled you out for a fight. Sigh. Turn that bad thought good, however, by remembering that they chose you because they consider you a worthy intellectual opponent and cannot operate without you. If they're your adversary, you're probably theirs too, Gutzman says. Politics and religion used to be a hard no-go, zones of polite conversation, but not so anymore, and that's a good thing. Heat in a conversation is good, says Gutzman. That means you're exposing yourself to different points of view, and you're learning and challenging each other. How can you avoid a pointless squabble? The line is personal hostility, and don't cross it, says Leslie. If you're even nearing that boundary, turn down the dial. If your sparring partner is getting angry or aggressive, try Gutzman's suggestion to de-escalate. I'm sorry. I didn't realize that this mattered so much to you. You could continue with, tell me more, if and only if a more productive conversation feels possible. But if it's just too heated, a distraction makes for an excellent exit strategy. Try. Time for pie, apple or pumpkin, because we can all agree on pie. The inappropriate jokester. Every family has one, so let's call him Uncle Bob. He's loud and brash. His opinions haven't changed since the 80s. And just as you're happily passing the sweet potatoes around the dinner table, he decides now a good time to drop a totally inappropriate joke. There are three possible explanations of the faux pas. The inappropriate jokers are either blind to their prejudice, trying to be controversial, or intolerant of other points of view, says Chuck Weisner, author of The Art of Conscious Conversation, Transform How We Talk, Listen, and Interact. None justify discrimination. Now, this is awkward. Should you feign a chuckle to keep the peace or make a scene and confront Uncle Bob for his racist, sexist, classic, homophobic joke? Naturally, it depends. If a person who represents that particular group is present, you probably need to intervene because it's a right thing to do, says Goodsman. You should say something both to that person's dignity and to avoid your eternal guilt from being a silent bystander, a situation that often hurts the offended person as much as the joke does. But you don't have to declare Uncle Bob a despicable racist and insist his change his ways this instant. He won't. Saying, Uncle Bob, that's not okay, as Guzman suggests, says in a few words everything that everyone is thinking. Or try Wisner's phrasing. That sounds racist to me. I know you don't mean that. The jokester is unlikely to double down with, I do, actually, as I'm a very racist. If the comment is so inflammatory that it sparks further conversation, be careful to critique the joke, not the person, and inflame your criticism as your own, Wisner suggested. To me, that joke is offensive, and let me tell you why. This could be a good chat for later when Uncle Bob is calm and alone, when there's time for a deeper but non-confrontational conversation about what's really going on. There's something in every bad joke that says, I'm frustrated, but I can't say it, says Goodsman. If you can get Uncle Bob to let it out, hopefully he'll do better next year. The drama queen. We all have those. The chatterbox on steroids, in Kerrigan's word. The drama queen, or king, is someone who similarly dominates the conversation, chatting your ear off about all the wild things you would never believe are happening in the worst week ever. The boring details of your week, meanwhile, can't possibly compare, so don't even try. Why do some people love drama? This person's always exaggerating because they want to be the center of attention, says Gerber. The more they do this, the more we pull away from over-the-top emotions of a life of constant crisis. We tend to avoid them because keeping up with the drama is an energy sucker, says Carrington. But this only means they'll turn it up. They've often exhausted people in their lives and are therefore coming on even stronger. The drama queen desperately wants your attention, and she's also terrified she'll lose it. Hence the show she's putting on in a hope she'll never look away. Resist the urge to cut her off, and instead set some boundaries you can both stick to. Be really clear in advance about what you're willing and not willing to do, says Carrington. Maybe this means you'll talk about her ex for 20 minutes, but no more. Or maybe it means you'll reschedule lunch until a week when you're feeling better. She might be mad in the moment, but the drama queen secretly loves the regular person treatment that shows you're sticking around for the real her. No drama required. The frenemy. Though all these personalities are different, none is more so than the frenemy. That is someone equal parts friend and enemy, a relationship phenomenon so subtle, personal, and complicated that sometimes you have to be in it to know it's there. I call this a seesaw friendship, says Gerber. Friendship, says Gerber, because there are highs and lows and you never know what you're going to get. One day your friend is fun and fab and a blast to be with. Then the next she is low-key, mad, or mean, and you have no clue why. Except really you know exactly why. The frenemy is a passive-aggressive person motivated by their perceived lack of value, and they're rolling their eyes at anything that you have or do that feels like it's undervaluing them. To feel better about themselves, the frenemy is desperate to knock you down a little bit at a time. When dealing with a frenemy, you have to protect yourself first. These people are almost firing arrows at you, says Wisner. So you can dodge the arrow, you can let the arrow pierce and hurt or offend you, or you can catch the arrow and stop it. Options A and B are easy in the moment, but C is the brave choice if you want things to change. To start a difficult conversation, Wisner suggests, that doesn't feel sincere to me. Do you mean that? That might address a particular jab, but if you actually want to fix and save the friendship, and maybe you don't, you're going to need to dig deeper. These people are highly competitive on the surface, but underneath they're insecure, hurt, and highly distrustful, says Gerber. To turn a frenemy into a real friend, you're going to have to open up and talk about it. Tell them what you're looking for in a friendship and what you're willing to offer, she says. But if they can't or won't have that conversation, well, that's your answer. And then there's the oversharer. Unsolicited commentary about someone's sex life, their recurring rash, their BFF's messy divorce, or whatever just happened in the bathroom, yuck, are all clues you've got an oversharer on your hands. Whether they're telling you too much or asking for details you're not comfortable sharing, this all-too-common persona has neither filter nor boundaries. The discomfort you feel comes from a difference of standards about what topics of conversation are okay, says Wisner. What they consider to be acceptable, need-to-know information, is different from what it is for you. At the same awkward time, the oversharer is only trying to get closer to you by revealing more about themselves and hoping you'll be similarly forthcoming. We tend to label these people as nosy, invasive, or rude, notes Gerber, but they really just want to be liked and accepted. To satisfy the oversharer and simultaneously veto endless TMI, consider sharing something else, still personal but less invasive, ideally, that satisfies their urge to connect. When they really cross the line, don't be shy. They're not. Say something that indicates your boundary is being crossed. Oh, my God, that's private, says everything, and you'll never hate to have to bring it up again. A compliment also works wonder with an oversharer, adds Gerber, because it refocuses the conversation in their direction while subtly resetting your boundary. To my nosy family friend who commented on the status of my uterus, for example, I could have given this wise response. You made having kids look easy. How do you do it? Then nod and smile. I won't get my baby shower do-over in this life, but at least next time I'll be ready to face an oversharer or any of the challenging people it takes to make a world. I Google, therefore I am. We've always pondered the big question, but now we can take such matters to a search engine. Here are the top 5 existential queries Americans ask Google. Why is the sky blue? What do dreams mean? What is the meaning of life? Why am I so tired? Who am I? The best mistake I ever made. Your true stories. Beloved painter Bob Rice was right. There are no mistakes, just happy accidents. Wrong person, right time. I saw an old high school friend's name pop on Facebook. The account had no photo, but I was excited and wrote her a message. Belinda, I'm so happy to find you again, she replied. Nice to hear from you, Bonnie. Let's catch up. We went back and forth updating each other on the years since high school. But something wasn't right. The stories just didn't jibe with my memories. Turned out this was a different Melinda from high school, not the one I had thought. But we were having so much fun, we kept in touch. And she's become a valued friend. I'm quite thankful for my case of mistaken identity. That's Bronnie Drury in Carmarker, California. Old flame name game. Years ago, I called my then boyfriend by my ex's name. I felt horrible, but then I realized I missed my ex and had never gotten over him. We've been back together ever since. Well, I hope that doesn't happen because my current girlfriend referred to me this morning by her ex-boyfriend's name. By accident. I'll forgive her. Down to a fine art. As an elementary art teacher with one classroom sink, I found it challenging to clean 30 pairs of hands at the end of class. I usually stood at the front of the line passing out paper towels. One day, I accidentally dropped a full roll into the running sink. Frustrated, I grabbed the soaked roll and gave it a quick squeeze and passed the damp towels down the line. Our routine was forever changed. Cleanup helpers love passing damp paper towels out while students wait at their tables, and everyone's hands are clean in no time. I passed this tip down to the art teacher who succeeded me, and she loved it. That's Jean Crosby, Lexington, Kentucky. Mistaking the cake. Years ago, I was making a chocolate cheesecake for a potluck. As I mixed ingredients, I was suddenly unsure if I had included the correct amount of chocolate. Overcompensated, I added 3 times the amount of chocolate that the recipe called for. But my cheesecake was a huge hit and was dubbed Joanne's Chocolate Truffle Cheesecake, much to my delight. Joanne Bernberg, Palm Bay, Florida. That sounds good, doesn't it? Park that thought. I parked my Camaro in the hotel lot while I played in a tennis tournament. I won 2nd place in the men's doubles. A group of us, including the cute redhead who'd won 2nd place in the women's doubles, were heading out to celebrate when I realized my Camaro had been towed. I recovered it quickly and was still able to meet up with the group. The redhead and I began dating, and we've been married 38 years now. To this day, she claims my calm reaction to my car being towed helped her realize I was special. That's Tim Ferguson in Paoli, Indiana. Making a splash. During a water fight at camp, I filled a bucket to toss at a fellow counselor. He ducked into my horror. I addressed the random visitor who was standing behind him. I ran into my cabin to hide, and when I slunk out, the stranger was waiting on the roof and got me back by dumping his own bucket of water on me. He was the camp bus driver, and to my surprise, he asked me on a date. Ron and I enjoyed 59 years of marriage. I wouldn't trade those years for anything. Eileen Rocker, Fairview, Oregon. That's kind of cool. Social media, FTW. A few years ago, my daughter asked me to film her doing a silly dance. The next morning, she screamed in disbelief. She'd mistakenly posted it publicly on TikTok, and it had already gone viral. We agreed she could keep the video up if I made my own account to keep an eye on things. I'm a human resources consultant, and I began posting industry knowledge of my own. Recently, a follower thanked me because my post helped her realize that her company was underpaying her, and she was compensated $10,000 in back pay. Hard to believe this old gal now has an account with thousands of followers and hundreds of people thanking me for my help I've been able to provide. That's Cindy Opeka in Sacramento, California. Burning out and starting up. I realized I was out of weed whacker fuel. I needed only a bit more and thought it wouldn't matter if I used chainsaw fuel. Turns out it did matter, and I burned up my weed whacker engine. However, that inspired me to create a tool that could easily mix a small amount of fuel in any ratio. 30 years later, we have sold 2.6 million units, and he's probably rich, too. Tim Richards, Sequin, Washington. Bang-up job. I left the job at McDonald's to work for a telephone company at a significant pay cut. At first, I wondered if I made a mistake. McDonald's might have been a dead end, but it paid more. But my new gig turned into a 30-year career during which I utilized the company's tuition assistance program to finish my undergrad and graduate degrees. I also became a manager and work with wonderful people who are still my friends. Best mistake I ever made for certain. Jan Carter from Durham, North Carolina. All right. The price is right. My husband and I had just opened a janitorial business. I accidentally priced some cleaning scrapers at 79 cents instead of $1.79. I realized my mistake when a customer bought out the entire stock. Turns out that he was the buyer for the county and inquired about prices for several other products. The county has been our best customer ever since. Terry Costanzo, Pahrump, Nevada. Got a good camping story? If good campers leave no trace, then bad campers probably leave hilarious stories. Maybe your tent pitching ended up in tatters, your hiking was hellacious, or all you managed to cook up over the campfire was a calamity. If you had a great adventure or misadventure in the great outdoors, see terms and share your story at rd.com/camping. It might appear in a future issue of Reader's Digest. National Interest. My day of no plastic. Is that even possible? One man went to extremes to find out, and there's a picture here of a Band-Aid, a plastic ball, a hot sauce packet, a pair of running shoes, a ballpoint pen, a spatula, a jar of hand soap, a razor, a safety razor, a pair of scissors with plastic handles, a cigarette lighter, an iPhone, and a variety of other plastic things, including a little rubber duck. On the morning of the day I had decided to go without using plastic products or even touching plastic, I opened my eyes and put my bare feet on the carpet, which is made of nylon, a type of plastic. I was roughly 10 seconds into my experiment, and I already committed a violation. Since its invention more than a century ago, plastic has crept into every aspect of our lives. It has made possible thousands of modern conveniences, but it has come with downsides, especially for the environment. In a 24-hour experiment, I tried to live without it altogether in an effort to see what plastic stuff we can do without and what we may be able to give up. As a journalist who lives a good lifestyle experiment, I have written books about some of the endeavors, including The Year of Living Biblically and My Life as an Experiment, One Man's Humble Quest to Improve Himself. At the start of my no plastic day, I made my way toward the bathroom, only to stop myself before I went in. "Could you open the door for me?" I asked my wife, Julie. "The doorknob has a plastic coating." She opened it for me, letting out a sigh. "This is going to be a long day." My morning hygiene routine needed a total revamp, which had required detailed research and preparations in the days before my experiment. I could not use my regular toothpaste, toothbrush, shampoo, or liquid soap, all of which were encased in plastic made of plastic. Fortunately, there is a huge industry of plastic-free products targeted at eco-conscious consumers, and I had bought an array of them, a haul that included a bamboo toothbrush with bristles made of wild boar hair. Instead of toothpaste, I had a jar of gray mint charcoal toothpaste pellets. I popped one in, chewed it, sipped water, and brushed. It was nice and minty, although the ash-colored spit was kind of unsettling. I like my shampoo bar, which is just what it sounds like. Mine was scented pink, grapefruit, and vanilla, and it lathered up well. According to shampoo bar advocates, it is also cheaper than bottle shampoo on a per-wash basis. One bar can last as much as 80 showers, which is good because the plastic-free life can be expensive. For example, Package Free sells plastic-free razors for upwards of $80. Take a blogger's advice. I mixed a do-it-yourself deodorant out of tea tree oil and baking soda. It left me smelling a little like a medieval cathedral, but in a good way. Making your own stuff is another way to avoid plastic, although it does require another luxury free time. Before I was done in the bathroom, I had broken the rules a second time by using the toilet, because the seat was plastic. Getting dressed is also a challenge, given that so many clothing items include plastic. I had ordered a pair of wool pants that promised to be plastic-free, but they had not arrived. In their stead, I chose a pair of old Banana Republic chinos. The tag said 100% cotton, but when I checked the day before with a very helpful Banana Republic relations representative, the full story turned out to be a little more complicated. The main fabric is indeed 100% cotton, but there is plastic lining in the zipper tape, internal waistband, woven label, pocketing, and threads, the representative told me. I cut my thumb trying to slice off the black brand label with an all-metal knife. Instead of a Band-Aid, yes, plastic, I used some gummed paper tape to stop the bleeding. Happily, my underwear, blue boxers from Cotonique, made of 100% organic cotton with a cotton drawstring in place of the elastic, which is often plastic, waistband, did not represent a plastic violation. I had found this item via an internet list of 14 hot and sustainable underwear brands for men. For my upper body, I lucked out. Our friend Kristen had knitted my wife a sweater for a birthday present. It had rectangles of blue and purple. It was 100% merino wool. "Could I borrow Kristen's sweater for the day?" I asked Julie. "You're going to stretch it out," Julie said. "It's for the planet Earth," I reminded her. The world produces about 400 million metric tons of plastic waste each year, according to a United Nations report. About half the plastic we encounter in daily life is tossed out after a single use. The report noted we have become addicted to single-use plastic products with severe environmental, social, economic, and health consequences. And I'm one of the addicts. I'd estimate that I toss about 800 plastic items in the garbage each year. Takeout containers, pens, cups, Amazon packages with foam inside, and more. Before my day at No Plastic, I immerse myself in a number of No Plastic books, videos, and podcasts. One of the books, Life Without Plastic, The Practical Step Guide to Avoiding Plastic to Keep Your Family and the Planet Healthy, by Jay Sinha and Chantel Plamondon, came from the Amazon wrapped in clear plastic, like a slice of American cheese. I mentioned this to Sinha, and he promised to look into it. I also called Gabby Salazar, a social scientist who studies what motivates people to support environmental causes, and asked for advice as I headed to my plastic-free day. "It might be better to start small," Salazar said. "Start by creating a single habit, like always carrying a stainless steel water bottle. After you've got that down, you can start another habit, like taking produce bags to the grocery. You build up gradually. That's how you make real change. Otherwise, you'd just be overwhelmed." "Maybe being overwhelmed will bring some sort of clarity," I said. "That'd be nice," Salazar replied. Admittedly, living completely without plastic is probably an absurd idea. Default is false. Plastic is a crucial ingredient in medical equipment, smoke alarms, and helmets. There's truth to the plastic industry catchphrase from the 90s. Plastic make it possible. In many cases, plastic can help the environment. Plastic airplane parts are lighter than metal ones, which means less fuel and lower carbon dioxide emissions. Solar panels and wind turbines have plastic parts. That said, the world is overloaded with this stuff, especially the disposable forms. The Earth Policy Institute estimates that people go through 1 trillion single-use plastic bags each year. The crisis is a long time coming. There's some debate over when plastic entered the world, but many date it to 1855, when a British metallurgist, Alexander Parker, planted a thermoplastic material as a waterproof coating for fabrics. He called the substance parkazine. Over the next decades, labs across the world birthed other types, all with similar chemistry. They are polymer chains, and most are made from petroleum or natural gas. Thanks to chemical additives, plastics vary widely. They can be opaque or transparent, foamy or hard, stretchy or brittle. They are known by many names, including polyester and styrofoam, as well as by shorthand abbreviations like PVC and PET. Plastic manufacturing ramped up for World War II and was crucial to the war effort, providing nylon parachutes and plexiglass aircraft windows. That was followed by a post-war boom, said Susan Frankel, author of Plastic, A Toxic Love Story, a book on the history and science of plastic. Plastic went into things like Formica counters, refrigerator liners, car parts, clothing, shoes, and just all sorts of stuff that was designed to be just used for a while. Then things took a turn. Where we really started to get into trouble is when it started going into single-use stuff, Frankel said. I call it prefab litter. The outpouring of straws, cups, bags, and other ephemera has led to disastrous consequences for the environment. According to the study by the Pew Charitable Trusts, more than 11 million metric tons of plastic enter the oceans each year, leaching into the water, disrupting the food chain, and choking marine life. Close to 20% of plastic waste gets burned, releasing CO2 into the air, according to the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, which also reports that only 9% of plastics are recycled. Some aren't economical to recycle, but other types degrade in quality when they are. Plastic may also harm our health. Certain plastic additives, such as BPA and phthalates, may disrupt the endocrine system in humans, according to the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences. Worrying effects may include behavioral problems, lower testosterone levels in boys, and preterm births and lower thyroid hormone levels for women. Solving this problem, plastic problem, can't fall entirely on the shoulders of the consumer, Salisol told me. We need to work on it on all fronts. Early in my no plastic day, everything looked menacing. It might be of harboring hidden polymers. The kitchen was particularly fraught. Anything I'd use for cooking was off limits. Even the microwave. Even leftovers were a no-go. My son waved a plastic baggie filled with French toast. You want some of this? Yes, I did. Instead, I decided to go foraging for raw food items. I left my building using the stairs rather than the elevator with its plastic buttons and walked to a health food store near my Manhattan apartment. I brought along bags of varying sizes, all of them cotton. I also had two glass containers. At the store, I filled up one of my bags with apples and oranges. Each had a sticker, another likely violation, but I ignored it. At the bulk bins, I scooped walnuts and oatmeal into my glass containers using a washed steel ladle I had brought from home. The bins themselves were plastic, which I ignored because I was hungry. I went to the cashier, and it was time to pay, which was a problem. Credit cards were out, so was Apple Pay, as iPhones contained plastic. And though the U.S. paper currency is made mainly of cotton and linen, each bill likely contains synthetic fibers, and the higher denomination have a security thread made of plastic to prevent counterfeiting. To be safe, I had brought along a cotton sack full of coins that I had withdrawn from the bank in my kids' piggy banks. At the checkout counter, I started stacking quarters as quickly as I could between nervous glances at the customers behind me. I'm really sorry this has taken so long, I said. That's okay, the cashier said. I meditate every morning so I can deal with turmoil like this. That's funny. He added that he appreciated my commitment to the environment. It was the first positive feedback I'd received. I counted out $19.02, exact change, and went home to eat my breakfast, nuts and oranges on a metal cookie tray, which I balanced on my lap. A couple of hours later, in search of a plastic-free lunch, I went to a sandwich and salad shop, toting my rectangular glass dish and bamboo cutlery. Can you make the salad in this glass container? I asked, holding it up. 1 minute, please, the man behind the counter said tersely. He called over a manager and said, okay, victory. But the manager then rejected my follow-up request to use my steel scooper. After lunch, I headed to Central Park, figuring this was the spot where I could relax in a plastic-free environment. I took the subway there, which scored me more violations, since the trains themselves had plastic parts and needed a metro card or smartphone to get through the turnstiles. At least I didn't sit in one of those plastic orange seats. I brought my own, an unpainted, fold-up Nordic-style teak chair, hard and austere. It's what I've been using at the apartment to avoid the plastic-tainted chairs and couches. I plopped my chair down near a pole in the middle of the car. The other passengers were so buried in their phones that the sight of a man in a wooden chair didn't faze them. Walking through Central Park, I spotted dental floss picks, a black plastic knife, and a plastic bag. Back home, I recorded some of my impressions. I wrote on paper with an unpainted cedar pencil from Zero Waste Pencil 10 set. Regular pencils contain plastic-filled yellow paint. And after a while, I went to get a drink of water, which brings up perhaps the most persuasive foil of all, microplastics. These tiny particles are everywhere, in the water we drink, in the air we breathe, in the oceans. They come from, among other things, degraded plastic litter. Are they harmful to us? I talked with several scientists, and the general answer I got was, we don't know yet. But those who are extra cautious can use products that promise to filter microplastics from water and air. I had brought a pitcher by LifeStraw that contains a membrane microfilter. Of course, the pitcher itself had plastic parts, so I couldn't use it on the big day. Instead, the night before, I spent some time at the sink filtering water and filling mason jars. Our kitchen looked as though it was ready for the apocalypse. The water tasted particularly pure, which I'm guessing was some sort of a placebo effect. I wrote for a while. Then I sat there in my wooden chair, phoneless, internetless. Julie took some pity on me and offered to play a game of cards. I shook my head. Plastic coating, I said. About 9 p.m., I took our dog for a nightly walk. I was using a 100% cotton leash I had bought online. I ditched the poop bag. Even the sustainable ones I found were with recycled or plant-based plastic. Instead, I carried a Mitchell spatula. Thankfully, I didn't have to use it. At 10:30 p.m., exhausted, I lay down on my makeshift bed, cotton sheets on the wood floor since my mattress and pillows are plasticky. I woke up the next morning glad to have survived my ordeal to be reunited with my phone, but also with a feeling of defeat. By my count, on my day of no plastic, I had made 164 violations. As Salazar had predicted, I felt overwhelmed and also uncertain. It is a good idea to use boar's hair toothbrushes, tea tree deodorant, and microplastic filtering devices. Or does the trouble of using those things make everyone so bonkers that they actually end up damaging the cause? I called Salazar for a pep talk. You can drive yourself crazy, she said, but it's not about perfection, it's about progress. Believe it or not, individual behavior matters. It adds up. Remember, she continued, it's not about plastic being the enemy. It's about single use as the enemy. It's the culture of using something once and throwing it away. I thought back to something that the author Susan Franco had told me. I'm not an absolutist at all. If you came into my kitchen, you would be like, you wrote this book and look how you live. Frankel does make an effort. She said she avoids single-use bags, cups, and packaging, among other things. I pledge to try, even after my not wholly successful attempt at a one-day ban. I'll start with small things. Building up habits like the shampoo bar, I can make produce bags through the grocery and might even start packing my steel water bottle and bamboo cutlery. And from there, who knows? And I'll proudly wear the Keep the Sea Plastic Free t-shirt that I bought online in the days leading up the experiment. It's just 10% polyester. Suspicious characters. Iowa's official online archive of court records can make for sensational reading. Last year, the Easter Bunny was listed as the legal representative in hundreds of criminal cases. It's not the first time fictional test cases have been listed on the court system's website. In 2014, Mickey Mouse filed a small claims case against Donald Duck. And in 1997, Santa Claus was convicted of felony burglary. And with that, let's switch over to Consumer Reports and continue our top picks of 2023 for healthy living. The better deal on sunscreens. Now, you think it's winter, we don't need, but it's been proven that you need to wear sunscreens year-round if you're going to be out in the sun for any length of time. The higher price for $38 is La Roche-Posay Anthiolos Melt-In Milk Lotion SPF 60. The better price is the Coppertone Water Babies at 50 SPF, and it's only cost $9 and for 8 ounces, so it's a lot better deal. The lowdown. La Roche-Posay all locations offers great sun protection in unscented formula, but it's pricey. Coppertone Water Babies protects even better, it got a perfect score on auto ratings, and costs far less, but it does have a fragrance and feels a little bit greasy. Trisha Caldallo, deputy editor of Health and Food, eats this. Taza Organically Dish Chocolate, Dishishly Dark Chocolate, 70% Cacao, $5 for a 2.5-ounce bar. This is the Taza, perfectly unrefined. I made this my chocolate mainstays after CR's test of heavy metals in chocolate showed it was one of our safer picks. I love the rich flavor and the unique stone-ground texture. New and cool are Slim Fitness Trackers. You got the Fitbit Inspire 3 for $100. A bright color display makes the Fitbit particularly easy to read. It's lightweight and slim, and it monitors basics, the heart rate, and steps, as well as your stress levels and sleep. And at $100, it's a less expensive alternative to a smartwatch. Rowing machine with everything. Tired of the treadmill? Works out on a rowing machine provide a non-weight-bearing, full-body cardiovascular workout Boy, they're hard to do. Our top-rated model is exceptionally easy to use, boasting sound construction, ergonomic operation, a big screen that displays your workout stats, and a variety of exercise programming. It's 95, scored a 95, the Peloton Row Basics, and it's only $2,995. So if you got some loose change around, you can get one of those. Over-the-counter hearing aids. The Luxe Lumen Self-Fitting OTC at $800. Programming these hearing aids for your specific needs is helpful. Just take a quick hearing evaluation on the connected Lexi app and it will do the rest. They also come with telecoil, a highly useful feature that taps into assistive listening systems at theaters, places of worship, airports, and more. That is kind of cool. Outdoor living, smokeless fire pit. If you ever spent a cozy outdoor evening wiping the tears from your smoke-stung eyes, you'll appreciate that this fire pit offers a satisfying bazaar with less irritating smoke. The Cousinot Clean Burn Fire Pit at $249. The Sprinkler and Hose Timer. Just plug your hose into the Rankyo Smart Hose Timer to automate your sprinkler. It will track the local weather forecast and adjust how much it waters accordingly, so you won't waste water or money, and it costs $100. The versatile smart plug, the CE Sync Outdoor Smart Plug, for $30. The GE Sync Outdoor Smart Plug makes it easy to remote control and set timers for string lights, holiday inflatables, and more. It's simple to set up, and plus it offers two outlets and that you can operate independently. Ooh, that's kind of cool. I'm going to have to get one of those for Christmas lights. And Natalie Van de Meer, deputy editor in print, owns this. A lot of pressure washers are big and cumbersome, so I was happy to find this DeWalt among the top models in CR's ratings. It's light and compact, and I can roll it around like a suitcase. Plus, it's simple to use. You just plug it in and spray. My sidewalk and deck have never looked better. It costs $300. DeWalt DWP 2100. The better deal, large gas grills. The higher price at $1,600 is the Weber Genesis S435. The better price at $750 is the Monument Grill 77352, and I tell you what, they both look pretty much identical. The lowdown. The sturdy Weber has a roomy cooking surface and a side burner. It excels in cooking evenness and is very good at indirect cooking. The bargain Monument has a slightly smaller cooking surface and no side burner, but preheating is faster and has a broader range of temperatures for cooking. String trimmers. Ooh, I hate those. Tops for serious trimming is the Makita XRU15PT at $450. The Makita is the single best battery trimmer we've tested. It draws power from a pair of 18-volt batteries that could also be used with other Makita tools, including cordless drills and saws. The budget battery model is the Ego ST150 battery string trimmer at $200. The best gas model for big yards is the Echo SMR2620 string trimmer at $360. Battery leaf blowers. The impressive blowing power is the Ego LB7654 at $300. Top-rated battery blower from Ego makes quick work of sweeping and loosening leaves and boasts a battery that works with its other highly rated lawn tools. The nice price is the Still BGA57 at $200. The great reliability is the Makita GBU leaf blower at $390. Battery lawnmowers. Excellent mowing and long run times are the Greenworks MO8AL, $750. This best-in-class Greenworks self-propelled mower excels at mulching, cutting evenness, and handling. It can run for 75 minutes on its two batteries, enough to mow one-third of an acre. The value price battery pick is the Ego LM2021-4 at $550, and the top-performing push mower is the Ryobi RY400-1200, $600. We love great gadgets. TVs. Exceptional. 65-inch monitors, the LG OLED 65G, $3,300. This top-rated LG 4K smart TV really has no weakness. The picture quality is excellent, and it's among the brightest OLED TVs we've ever tested. With vibrant color images, sound is above average, too. Impressive 43-inch option is the Samsung QN43QN at $1,200. And the budget 65-inch pick is the Roku 65R6A, $600. smartwatches. The Apple Watch Ultra GPS and Cellular, 49mm at $795. The Apple Watch Ultra is built with durability in mind, with a rugged titanium case and an extra long battery life. And the big bright display makes it easier to read on the go. Android-compatible choice is the Google Pixel Watch LTE at $400. And the great features for less is the Samsung Galaxy Watch's LTE at $330. Smartphones. Most advanced function is the Apple iPhone 14 Pro Max at $1,100. The iPhone 14 Pro has better cameras than previous versions, an always-on display, and an impressive 40-hour battery life. We hadn't tested the iPhone 15 at press time. Considering the problems they've been having with that, it's probably a good thing. 85 is the best Android phone. It's Samsung Galaxy 23 Ultra at $1,200. And the best bargain buy is the Samsung Galaxy A54 5G at $450. Angela Lashbrook, Wider Audio Expansion, owns this, the iPad Mini 460. The iPad is a terrific tablet for browsing the internet and watching movies, but I especially love it as a reading and note-taking tool when paired with Apple Pencil, sold separately. The better deal, wireless earbuds. The higher price are the Bose at $300, Quiet Comfort earbuds too. The better price are the Sennheiser CX Plus at $180. The lowdown. The Bose Quiet Comfort Earbuds 2 provide impressive noise cancellation for instant quiet when you need it, and a very satisfying sound. But you can get nearly the same performance for a much lower price with the Sennheiser CX Plus Earbuds. They're also tops for both noise cancelling and sound quality. Security cameras. The Google Nest Cam with floodlights, wired, $280. Google's first floodlight camera is the best we've tested, thanks in part to its bright 2400 lumen lights. It can record 3 hours of video free, or you can pay for storage to record more, and detects people, vehicles, and animals. There's no monthly subscription fee. Garage door opener. This smart controller lets you remotely operate and monitor your garage door from your phone. It also connects to Amazon and Walmart systems, so packages you order can be left inside your garage safe from porch pirates. And it costs $30. By the way, the Google Nest floodlight is $280. The smart speaker does everything you'd expect, plays music, responds to questions like what's the weather, controls your smart devices on command, and more. Plus, when paired with an Eero router, it works as a Wi-Fi network extender, a neat trick for a relatively inexpensive gadget. The Amazon Echo, fourth generation smart speaker, for $100. And then we're going to get into some automobiles here. The top picks for under $35,000. Small car, the Toyota Corolla Hybrid, $23,000 to $28,000. The Corolla Hybrid embodies practicality with its low sticker price, good predicted reliability, and outstanding fuel economy at 48 miles per gallon overall. In our highway test, this budget sedan recorded an impressive 59 miles per gallon. Plus, Corollas come with key safety features, more than many models that cost twice as much. And for compact SUVs, the Toyota Corolla Cross at $23,000 to $31,000. The small SUV, the Subaru Forester, from $26,000 to $37,000. Small truck, Ford Maverick Hybrid, from $25,000 to $34,000. And the midsize sedan, the Toyota Camry Hybrid, from $29,000 to $34,000. Electric car, the Nissan Leaf, $28,000 to $36,000. The Leaf provides a low-price entry into the realm of electric cars. Its small size and comfortable ride will make it well-suited for urban commuters. Go with the SC Plus for a 60-kilowatt battery and 200-plus miles of range. Top picks for over $35,000. The midsize two-row SUV, the Hyundai Santa Fe Hybrid, $36,000 to $42,000. The midsize three-row SUV is the Kia Telluride, $36,000 to $53,000. A perennial top pick since its 2020 introduction, the Telluride continues to set the benchmark for a midsize three-row SUVs. Among its many virtues are a practical, boxy shape and a powerful engine backed by a smooth transmission. CR members give it high marks for satisfaction as well. Electric car, the Tesla Model 3, $40,000 to $53,000. And the luxury SUV, the Lexus NX 350H, $43,000 to $60,000. The better deal. Midsize two-row SUVs. Higher price, $69,000 Lexus RX. The better price is $35,000 to $43,000 for the Toyota Venza. The lowdown. The latest RX isn't as refined as previous model years. Meanwhile, the less expensive Venza shines for a bit more upscale than a typical Toyota. It's a touch narrower than the RX, but offers similar functionality, and it's quite efficient with 37 miles per gallon overall. And how about bicycles? Billy Soul Eclipse at $1,500. This is an e-bike. Styled like a classic cruiser bicycle, with a wide grip handlebars and a relaxed riding position, among the tested e-bikes, this one shines for its reasonable price and really being fun to ride. It's kind of cool looking. It's like a, if you're familiar with bicycles, it looks like a women's bike with a step through rather than a crossover. Home, by the way, it cost, did I mention it cost $1,500? Home EV charger. The Classic Grizzly is $320. The Grizzle E-Classic is a basic, rugged, 240-volt electric car charger, less expensive than many comparable models. It can be installed on a 40-amper circuit. There are Wi-Fi-connected versions you control through a smartphone app for a little more money, but most owners will find the car's app is all they need for monitor charging. NetBase 622 dash cam, $400. Dash camera. The NetBase 62GW has a high resolution, image stabilization, and effective night vision. But what sets it apart is its extra features, like a polarizer to limit reflections, its slow-mo mode, and cloud-based file storage. And Michael Prasikita, Associate Director of Web Development, owns this. The compact SUV, the 2023 Kia Sportage Hybrid, $27,500 to $43,000. While trying out the Sportage Hybrid and CR's Test Center, I was so impressed by the smooth ride and tech features like the responsive touchscreen and effective lane centering assistance that I ended up buying one. I love the preppy powertrain, roomy cargo space, and styling too. Plus, my three kids appreciate the spacious and comfortable rear seats. We love top-performing equipment, car batteries. The number one is the Smart Start Platinum AGM S65 PLT at $185. Remember when batteries cost $30? Golly. Interstate Megatran Plus MTP at 24 is the number two at 125. Superstart Platinum 35 PLT at $185 is third. And Interstate MTX 4886 is $185. And finally, the Duracell 51R at $105. And tires, all season, the Continental Pure Contact LS at $142. The all-season SUV, the Bridgestein Hi-Track at $169. For winter and snow, the Bridgestone Blizzak WS90 at $131. Winter snow truck, Nokian Hakkapeliitta RF5 SUV at $246. And winter snow performance, the Bridgestein Ventac Pro at $180. 9 secrets to getting great customer service. And we probably won't be able to finish this off before next week, but we'll go ahead and start it. How to reach a wretch by phone and have your problem solved. Stat. I'll tell you what. Let me check and see if there's something that's a little shorter. We'll do this whole thing next week. How about we do the road report? Digital car keys get smarter. A growing number of automakers are allowing drivers to use a smartphone app as a fully functioning car key, including BMW, Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Tesla. Unlike earlier car key apps that only let you remotely start, cool, warm, lock, or unlock a vehicle, these new ones let you drive without a key fob. Some may even allow you to share a temporary key with another driver through Apple or Google Wallet. But check the fine print. Some smartphone app keys work only with certain phones. Of course, these functions depend on the phone being on and charged. Stay safe when driving with pillows, seatbelt handles, and other add-ons. Need more comfortable behind the wheel? It's now easy to find lumbar support pillows, grab handles that make seatbelts simpler to put on, and extenders that make the pedals easier to reach. But such add-ons can interfere with seatbelts and airbags, of adding risk in a crash. That's why it's important to consult an expert about using them safely. Find one via the Association for Driver Rehabilitation Specialist, AADED.net. The Dodge Hornet First Drive. Base price range is $31,000 to $46,000. Destination charges are $1,600. Price is driven was $35,000. The Hornet is Dodge's first all-new model in almost a decade. The small SUV shares most of its body, powertrain, and interior with its Stellantis stablemate, the Alfa Romeo Tonale, and it's likewise built in Italy. It's a touch smaller than the most popular models in its class, like the Honda CR-V and the Toyota RAV4. CR's take: the 268-horsepower turbocharged four-cylinder engine gives the Hornet more zip than its rivals, but the unrefined powertrain, stiff ride, and dual handling and elevated noise are disappointing and keep the Hornet from being truly enjoyable to drive. The Hornet shares some shortcomings with the Tonale, such as an awkward driving position and poor quality interior finishes. The vital statistic: 37 million, the number of car crashes that could be prevented over a 30-year period if advanced driver assistance systems, ADASs, may be made standard on new cars. That would prevent 14 million injuries and nearly 250,000 deaths. And as a recall, Ford is recalling more than 870,000 F-150 pickup trucks from the 2021 through the 2023 model year because their electronic parking brakes could activate while the vehicle is in motion, possibly causing drivers to lose control. The problem occurs when the electronic parking brake system's wiring harness chafes against the vehicle's rear axle housing. This impacts only trucks with a single exhaust outlet. What to do? Ford dealerships will replace or repair the vehicle's parking brake wiring or harness free of charge. For more information, contact Ford at 866-436-7332. Let's close out with a couple of quotable quotes. "It's okay to come home and go, I want to quit, as long as you get up the next day and do what you've got to do." Leslie Jones, comedian. "I was never worried when he went into space, though of the two of us, we never could have predicted I'd be the one with the more dangerous job." Gabby Giffords, former congresswoman married to former astronaut and current U.S. Senator Mark Kelly. "When you're through changing, you're through." Marcia Stewart, entrepreneur. "You need help. You need advice. You need wisdom. You need support, and you need the joy. It all comes from one generation to the next." That's by Henry Winkler. "My ultimate goal in life is to read books. I like to listen to music I enjoy, play with my cats, drink some semi-decent red wine, and watch a live baseball game on TV. Living itself is adventure enough." That's Haruki Murakami, novelist. And with that, we have run out of time for today's episode of Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next week, and thank you so very much for listening.